Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Lessons from the world's top professors. Anytime, anyplace. World history examined and science explained. This is One Day University. Welcome. And we're back on the untold history of sports in America. I'm your host, Mike Coscarelli. Last time, we talked some baseball, the true origins of the game, and how the sport was eventually made legitimate and professional. Today, we'll be talking about a sport with much more barbaric roots. The sweet science, boxing. Much like our baseball episode, we'll be talking about the origins of the sport and why it was much maligned when it first came to the States from England. You'll also learn the differences between a prize fight and a boxing match, and why the diversity of ethnic groups in the U.S. has made boxing more important in America than any other country. Matt?
Boxing is unlike other sports. Love it or hate it. And look, you should probably hate it, but that's up to you. Full disclosure, I'm a pretty big boxing fan and I find the sport absolutely fascinating. But whatever your opinion about the sport, I want to impress upon you that boxing is competition in one of its rawest forms. You know, inside the boxing ring, fighters dictate their own destinies. You know, they physical skill, mental wits at their disposal. Two men enter a ring, stripped to the waist, and one man wins and one man loses. Or actually, increasingly in our modern era, one woman wins and one woman loses. Boxing is a tough, rugged, unforgiving, violent sport. And because of this rugged violence, boxing can be a matter of life and death. And I mean that literally. People have died in the boxing ring. But it's this violence and the ever-present threat of death that gives boxing its unique intensity among sports. It's why people have found boxing both horrifying and alluring all at the same time. There's a fairly recent writer named Joyce Carol Oates, and she has a great book about boxing titled simply On Boxing. And here's something she points out. She writes this. One plays football and one plays baseball, but one does not play boxing. You know, as Joyce Carol Oates is telling us, the stakes are higher in boxing than they are in other sports. Boxing is much more than just a game. Well, our goal today is to uncover the meaning and the significance of boxing in 19th century America. That's what today is, the history of 19th century boxing. And before I go any further, let me give you a quick primer on terminology. You will probably notice that I'm going to use the terms boxing and prize fighting interchangeably. Don't be confused. Prize fighting just means professional boxing. It's literally fighting for a prize, boxing for money. And as you also hear, when we discuss prize fighting in 19th century America, we are almost always talking about bare knuckle prize fighting, no gloves. Though this changes, very importantly, this changes at the end of the 19th century. We will discuss this. Okay. All cultures have combat sports, you know, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, you name it. Along with the simple foot race, the spectacle of two men fighting each other, it's one of the earliest sports. But boxing in its modern form, it comes from England, where in the late 1600s, two men were entering boxing rings and they were fighting each other or over a series of rounds. And more, they were getting paid to do so. By the early 1800s, boxing was immensely popular in England. There was a growing group of English boxing fans known as the Fancy. These were hard-drinking men who dressed in loud, colorful clothing. They were fancy like peacocks, and they idolized the rough-and-tumble prize fighters. You know, the term fan in sports, it either comes from this term, the fancy, or from the word fanatic. There's disagreement about this. Maybe it's both. Well, like those bat and ball games we talked about last time, boxing came over to the United States from England. But in the first few decades of the 19th century, the sport was pretty unpopular in the United States. It was very much discouraged and frowned upon. Prize fighting had yet to catch on and overcome the moral opposition in the United States to violent blood sports. So the sport had way more critics than it had fans. When critics railed against the sport, they pointed to fights like the 1842 prize fight between Christopher Lilly and Tommy McCoy. And there are some names that I'm going to be emphasizing more than others. I've said their names, Lilly and McCoy, though those names aren't particularly important for this story. The Lilly-McCoy fight took place on a cliff overlooking the Hudson River in New York. And this fight lasted 119 rounds. Now, let me tell you how rounds worked back then. Today, a round in boxing, it's 3 minutes timed. But back then, rounds worked like this. A round went until someone was knocked to the ground. Once a fighter was knocked to the ground, he then had 30 seconds to get up and stand at a line in the middle of the ring or in the middle of the field, wherever the fight was taking place. And this line was known as the scratch. You have 30 seconds to stand up and get to the scratch. And then a new round would commence. So a round could last 10 minutes. It might last 10 seconds. Well, this fight between Lilly and McCoy in 1842, this fight lasted 119 rounds. It lasted 2 hours and 41 minutes. And in this fight, one of the prize fighters, Tommy McCoy, he tried to quit. But his handlers, the guys in his corner, they had money riding on the fight. They had bet money on Tommy McCoy, so they goaded him into continuing. And McCoy continued, and he died. The cause of death was later determined to have been from drowning in his own blood. His lungs filled with blood, and he suffocated. And critics of prize fighting, they looked at fights like this, and they saw a sport that was anachronistic. You know, that is, they said it belonged to an earlier, more brutal age. This is not sport, they said. This is butchery. This is a crime. Bull and bear fights, okay. Gander pulling, maybe. But this was human beings committing acts of savagery against each other. But here's what happens. Prize fighting starts to get more popular. Prize fighting begins to capture the nation's attention in this same decade, the same decade of the fight I just told you about, the 1840s. And the reason that prize fighting became relevant at this time was that the sport gave expression to one of the more significant social conflicts in this era. In the 1840s, prize fighting was fueled by ethnic tensions, particularly the rivalry between native-born Americans and Irish immigrants. Let me tell you a little secret about boxing. Boxing is most popular when there is a fight between two men who represent different backgrounds, different races, religions, ethnicities, views about a war, whatever. When two men of two different backgrounds enter a boxing ring and they confront each other directly, The ring becomes a space where these identities are transformed into a very easy to understand physical struggle. And the United States is filled with people of different backgrounds and identities. I'm going to be an American national chauvinist here and argue that boxing has meant more in the United States than it has elsewhere. And that's because our national diversity gives the sport its tremendous meaning. Now, in a couple of lectures, we're going to discuss interracial prize fights, fights between white men and black men. And that's when this symbolism and these tensions are off the charts. But in the 1840s, boxing gave expression to the national conflict over Irish immigration. There was a huge immigrant surge in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s. And most of these immigrants were Irish. Poor, Catholic, Irish men, women, and children. They were fleeing a terrible famine in their home country. And this wave of immigrants was not welcomed by many Protestant Americans who believed that they were being drowned in a sea of Irish. There was anti-Irish hysteria in this country. And the response to this perceived Irish threat, it's what's known as nativism. Nativists, that is the native born, they argued, in fact, they still argue today, that immigration is ruining the country and immigration must be halted. Yet today, nativists point to different groups as the problem, but in the 1840s, they were pointing their finger at the Irish. And it was in this context that fights between native-born Americans and Irish immigrants, they became meaningful. They became popular. You know, these fights were much more than just boxing matches. They were symbolic contests for supremacy and honor in which the boxers represented a whole group of people. And I'm going to repeat that because I think that's an important point. These fights, they were much more than just boxing matches. They were symbolic contests for supremacy in which the boxers represented entire groups of Americans. The fight that I think best symbolizes these tensions is an 1849 bare-knuckle contest between Tom Heyer. He was a native-born New Yorker of English background. And an Irish immigrant named James Yankee Sullivan. These two men, Heyer and Sullivan, they first tangled in a New York City saloon, and words and insults were exchanged. And then it was agreed that each side would find investors and put up $5,000 for a winner-take-all match. That would be about $150,000 today. Both men, they trained for this fight. They started running. They were lifting dumbbells. And prize fighting was illegal throughout most of the United States. So those who wanted to see this fight, here's what they were told. They were told to go to a Baltimore port where they would catch a steamboat that would take them to the secret fighting location, which was a small deserted island in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay. And it was covered with a dusting of February snow. It was a fairly quick fight. The New York Herald, they described the 16th and final round like this. I'm going to read from the newspaper. Both men came up bloody to the scratch, Sullivan being literally clotted with gore, while the crimson, and that means blood, while the crimson shone on Heyer's chest from a lance wound, which had been made under the right eye to keep it closing out his sight. In other words, and this speaks to the brutality of boxing, his eye was so swollen he could not see, but they cut it so the blood would come out and he'd be able to use his vision. Heyer let fly both a left and a right to Sullivan's face, who took it without wincing in the least. Heyer then rushed Sullivan and threw him to the ground, and Sullivan was found to be entirely exhausted. He could not come up again, and one of his seconds carried him from the ring. So Heyer, the native born, he won. And telegraph wires, they transmitted the results all over the eastern United States. And the native borns rejoiced, while the Irish immigrants, they toasted and drank to their fallen hero. You know, certainly no later than this fight in 1849, boxing was very much on the national radar screen. And I will say it again for emphasis. What made boxing popular in the first place were the ethnic tensions from this era.
After the break, prize fighting becomes boxing, boxers start wearing gloves, and America crowns its first celebrity heavyweight champion.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
American ethnic tensions gave the sport its tremendous meaning. It wasn't until the end of the 19th century that prize fighting achieved its very prominent position in American culture. The sport's popularity, it surged in the 1880s and the 1890s. And other than baseball, boxing will be the most popular sport in the United States from the 1880s all the way through the 1970s. I mean, really all the way until a guy named Muhammad Ali retires. We will talk all about Ali. The late 19th century surged in popularity in prize fighting. It was for a few reasons. One was publicity. In the 1880s, the sport began to get more press, and especially from a man named Richard Kyle Fox and his publication, The National Police Gazette. This was a new sports sheet, the Police Gazette, where men could read about boxing and gambling, true crime. They could look at illustrations of scantily clad women. The National Police Gazette was sort of the Playboy magazine of its day. And Richard Kyle Fox, he covered boxing, but he did more than just cover it. He promoted the sport. He used the sport to sell his papers. And to an extent, Fox made the sport his own. I think of Richard Kyle Fox as the first boxing promoter. You know, Fox was the one who suggested who should fight whom. He was the one who put up the large sums of money that the prize fighters would be fighting for, you know, sometimes up to $5,000, a fortune back then. Fox is the guy who devised official weight classifications in the sport, you know, lightweight, middleweight, heavyweight. And it was Fox who came up with the idea of rewarding symbolic championship belts to the winners of championship fights. In fact, Fox offered belts to the champions not only in boxing, but also in wrestling, and this is no joke, clog dancing. And I'm sorry to tell you, that is the only time I am going to say clog dancing in this course. So Fox is the man who first sold boxing to the American public. All right, so Richard Kyle Fox. Another reason for the sport's popularity, or maybe I should say its increasing acceptance, boxing became more rational. And by that, I mean this. It became more rule-bound, more respectable. At the end of the 19th century, boxing promoters adopted something called the Marquis of Queensberry rules. So these were new boxing rules that came from England. And the Queensberry rules introduced three-minute timed rounds, like we have today. This was instead of a round being until one man was knocked down. The Queensberry rules moved to a 10-second count instead of 30. So 10 seconds and you are out. And very importantly, the Queensberry rules mandated that fighters now wear gloves. And these rules were supposed to discipline the sport and supposedly make it safer. Now, ironically, one can make a very strong argument that the introduction of gloves has actually made boxing more dangerous. You know, before gloves, men did not hit each other in the head all that often. It was just too easy to injure your hand on your opponent's hard skull. But with gloves, with padding on your hands, now you could hit your opponent in the head repeatedly. Whether or not gloves made the sport less safe, they instituted these rules thinking they were making the sport safer, less brutal. And then finally, absolutely critical to the rise of boxing's popularity at this time was one man, one fighter, John L. Sullivan. More than any other sport, boxing depends on larger-than-life characters. Well, boxing got one in John L. Sullivan, a man whose exploits were chronicled and promoted through the popular press. John L. Sullivan, who went by the nickname the Boston Strong Boy, he's the first national boxing star. In fact, he's really considered the greatest sports star of the 19th century. John L. Sullivan achieved celebrity unequaled in his time. He's Tom Brady, LeBron James, and Tiger Woods all rolled into one. You know, men who had been lucky enough to meet him, they would say to others, "Shake the hand that shook the hand of the great John L. Sullivan," and other men would jump at the chance to do so. It's beginning with John L. Sullivan that the heavyweight champion occupied a famed public office, really, you know, not unlike the presidency, though the heavyweight champion was often more famous and sometimes better liked than the man in the White House. John L. Sullivan was the son of Irish immigrants. He grew up fighting in the rough Boston streets and then later in the seedy Boston saloons. And in 1881, he fought for the heavyweight championship. This was a new weight classification devised by Richard Kyle Fox, and John L. Sullivan won. And he would remain the heavyweight champion for 11 years, which is a remarkably long time for a boxer to be on top. John L. Sullivan was a tremendous puncher. One opponent said being hit by Sullivan was like being hit with a telegraph pole. He was a prodigious drinker, and he often fought drunk. He was a braggart. He was a bully. He was a showman. John L. Sullivan used to tour the country. He'd go from city to city and offer $1,000 to any man who could last four rounds in the ring with him. Not win, just remain standing after those four rounds. So it would seem that John L. Sullivan took on all comers, but he didn't really. He refused to fight black fighters. And this refusal was not uncommon, as this was an era in which Americans were becoming increasingly uneasy with the idea of interracial sport. We will talk about this two lectures from now. All right, John L. Sullivan is most famous for two fights. And these two fights provide us a nice before and after look at the sport of prize fighting as it exploded in popularity in the 1880s and the 1890s. So let me tell you about these two fights. The first was a fight between Sullivan and a guy named Jake Kilrain. And this was in 1889. This was the last heavyweight championship contest not to be fought under the Queensberry rules. In other words, this was a bare knuckle fight and the rounds still are not being timed. This must have been an amazing fight to witness if you're into that kind of thing. The promoters wanted to hold the fight in New Orleans, but the police said they would stop the fight as prize fighting was illegal in that city. And look, when something is illegal in New Orleans, you know it's really disreputable. So both the fighters and the fans, they took trains into rural Mississippi, where a wooden boxing arena had been hastily built in the middle of a field. And John L. Sullivan and Jake Kilrain engaged in a brutal slog, 2 hours and 16 minutes under the blazing Mississippi sun. The thermometer read 100 degrees in the shade. And even with this intense heat, Sullivan wore his trademark long leggings, and these were named after him. We call them Long Johns. To keep John L. Sullivan fortified during this long fight, his handlers gave him a mixture of tea and whiskey between rounds. And in the 45th round, Sullivan began vomiting. One clever reporter covering the bout wrote, "Sullivan's stomach held the whiskey but rejected the tea." That's a good line. Finally, just before the 75th round was about to start, a doctor examined Kilrain and told his handlers, "If he fights one more round, he will die." They did the right thing. They threw a sponge into the ring. This was the signal that their man could not go on any longer. John L. Sullivan remained champion. That was 1889. Sullivan's next fight was 3 years later. And the 1892 fight between John L. Sullivan and James Corbett is significant for a number of reasons. This 1892 contest is the fight that symbolizes the transition of prize fighting from an outlaw sport, you know, taking place in a Mississippi swamp, to a legitimate athletic spectacle. First of all, it was the first time that Sullivan fought under the Queensberry rules. So it marks the end of bare-knuckle boxing and the beginning of an era of seeming rationality in boxing. Second, this fight was also scheduled for New Orleans, but this time the fight did occur in New Orleans. It was held at the city's exclusive Olympic Athletic Club, where men in the front rows, they came dressed in black coats, ties, top hats. You know, so the audience itself was very respectable. We'll talk about why upper-class men gravitated towards sports like boxing and football next time. Third, this fight was important because James Corbett won. He knocked out John L. Sullivan in the 21st round, and many Americans rejoiced that the man they considered a drunk and a bully, he had gone down to a man they considered his antithesis. Jim Corbett was thought to be a different breed of boxer. He was from San Francisco, and he had trained in athletic clubs rather than in saloons and on the streets. Corbett had gone to college. For a while, at least, he had worked as a bank teller, a respectable middle-class job. And Corbett made his name fighting with gloves. Again, this was just considered more respectable than bare knuckles. With his trademark pompadour hairstyle, the press dubbed him Handsome Jim. They called him Gentleman Jim. And actually, it was this latter name that stuck, Gentleman Jim Corbett. So Corbett was seen as everything Sullivan was not. He was presented as a sophisticated, gentlemanly fighter, just the man to bring boxing into the modern age. Now, I've written about the history of boxing in San Francisco, so I've done some research on Corbett. And I'm here to tell you that Gentleman Jim Corbett was no gentleman. Like John L. Sullivan, he was a bully and a hard drinker. He beat his wife. But the public perception was different. And perception is everything. And so it was Corbett who ushered boxing into an era of new respectability. All right, one last thing to say here. Once Jim Corbett became champion, he also refused to fight black fighters. But the black heavyweights were coming, and one in particular, a man named Jack Johnson, was on the horizon.
That's all for now. Next time on The Untold History of Sports in America, presented by One Day University, get ready for some football.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.